Active Trading. I'm Lori Waffenschmidt.
In this country, in the early days of radio, a special kind of radio station dominated the airwaves. They were known as the Border Blasters. Owned and operated by Americans, but on paper with Mexican ownership, they poured forth their extraordinary wattage, somewhere around 250,000 watts, from the Mexican side of the border. Del Rio, Texas, was the home of the best-known border stations. The father of border radio, Dr. John R. Brinkley, set up shop there after he was chased out of Kansas.
Say, folks, here's something the whole family will be interested in, a chance to earn extra spending money. Listen carefully. Here's all there is to it. Just send us your name and address. You send no money, and you don't pay the postman.
Dr. Brinkley's special brand of broadcasting has left its mark on American radio, as we hear in this report prepared by Rachel Moraine.
In the Lone Star State of Texas by the Silver Rio Grande.
When I was growing up on the plains of West Texas, my brothers and I used to sneak downstairs late at night and listen to the radio. Robert, the second oldest, always tuned the station in. Then we'd huddle together in the dark, mesmerized by Sister Dorothy describing how she died, gone to heaven, came back and wrote a book about it that you could get absolutely free for a small donation. Other nights we'd hear hillbilly music while we waited for the old Wolfman to come on and spin his collection of gritty rock and roll records. This was Border Radio. It all started in 1931 when Dr. John R. Brinkley opened a goat gland clinic in Del Rio, Texas. Just across the Rio Grande River in Villa Cunha, Mexico, he built station XER with enough juice to blot out any U.S. or Canadian station operating near its frequency. Brinkley sat in his Del Rio mansion and broadcast via telephone lines to his station. Not too many people remember those early Brinkley broadcasts, but one who does is Bess Bradley, librarian for the Valverde County Library in Del Rio.
When I was out in California when I was 18, I'd go turn on the radio station and I'd get John R. Brinkley's radio station in Del Rio, Texas, down here south of the Rio Grande.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? The subject for discussion at this time is your health. Not my health, but the health of my listeners and friends throughout Radio Land.
Oh, his voice was lovely. To describe him, he had a deep voice, and it would just wound you. It was so beautiful, and he'd have these people thinking, there is a second chance, you know, for me to be vigorous, alert, and alive, and all that stuff. It was crazy.
Dr. and Mrs. Brinkley of the Brinkley Hospital, I've been talking to you for many years over the radio. And we've been giving you good advice. We've been having lots of men and women as patients. And Dr. Brinkley, in person, at this very moment, as I face this microphone, invites you, ladies and gentlemen, to pay a visit before the cold undertaking slab, where funeral procession, the last ride, the grieving loved ones, and 6 feet of earth are your portion prematurely.
Del Rio thrived during the Depression as the townspeople and Brinkley's 300 employees catered to the steady stream of patients arriving daily by train, eager to pay Brinkley's $750 medical fee. Gerald Carsons, Brinkley's biographer, learned that the doctor's success inspired other entrepreneurs to establish Border Blasters. The diseases were different. Norman Baker offered a cancer cure at Laredo Station XENT, but the programming was the same.
There was a lonesome cowboy. There was a fiddler called the Champion Fiddler of Arkansas. He came with him. There was a woman that pitched perfume, and there was a yogi. They were really weird people.
You had fortune tellers like Rose Dawn that said, send me your handkerchief. She dressed in pink. She was pink all over. She had a pink house.
She had a pink Cadillac with her name on it. It was a veritable carnival down on the Rio Grande with J.R. Brinkley as the ringmaster. The FCC issued regulations designed to put Brinkley out of business. They declared that radio programming must be in the public interest. but XER was licensed to Mexico and out of U.S. control. In 1933, Mexico imposed a few regulations of its own. More Spanish programming, they decreed. Their demands were ignored, and the federales closed XER. The following year ushered in a new administration, and this gave Brinkley the opportunity to rebound back to the airwaves with station XERA.
And then he built something called a directional tower south of XERA, which directed the juice up this way, and they say that it sometimes reached 1,000,000 watts. And it was then definitely the most powerful radio station in, I guess, the world.
This brings us up to the time for the old-fashioned hymn. Well, we've chosen one this morning that we know you're going to like because we like it just an awful lot. The title of it is Turn Your Radio On. And, Jim, if you're ready, why, we'll lead right out.
Come and listen in to a radio station where the mighty host of heaven sings.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
In the 30s, radio is your only contact to the outside world. And it was just a fabulous experience for me because I was one of those people that loved to listen and hear everything. And I had music on all day long.
Listen to the music in the air.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. Heaven's glory share. Heaven's glory share.
The border station's loyal listening audience were the rural folk. Hillbilly and country groups like the Callahan Brothers, the Maddox Brothers and Rose, and Cowboy Slim Reinhardt could be heard. In his book, Country Music USA, historian Bill Malone credits these stations with the main role in disseminating country music throughout the United States. American advertisers who already had country groups on their payroll to pitch their products realized the border was a gold mine. Musicians moved to the border. A popular band at Nashville's Grand Ole Opry was the Pickard family. Ruth Pickard recalls how in 1937, Harry O'Neill of the Consolidated Royal Chemical Company approached the band.
And so he said, how would you like to go down and play at XERA in Villa Cuña, Coahuila? And we were delighted to the idea of going to Mexico and picking up a little Spanish. So we went down and sang at the station that belonged to Dr. John R. Brinkley of Del Rio, Texas. We would start off with some old song that the whole family would sing, like, how many biscuits can you eat this morning, this morning?
How many biscuits can you eat this morning, this morning? Oh, how many biscuits can you eat? Pork and biscuits and ham and meat this morning. No breakfast, no sugar.
And then after we were there a while, why, our sponsor sent the Carter family down, Miss Maybelle Carter, A.P. Carter, and his wife, Miss Sarah Carter.
This is the original Carter family to keep that Good Neighbor Get-Together program a-perking right along. A.P., Sarah, Maybelle, Jeanette, Helen, June, and Anita. And are they on the sunny side? Well, just listen.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep
one of the best-loved country groups, side. The Carter family, lived in Del Rio from 1938 until 1941, singing over XERA and recording for nearby stations XENT and XEG.
Now, the Carter family wants to know when you're coming down to Monterey. The International Bridge is open 24 hours a day for your convenience, and the custom authorities will do everything possible to cut all the red tape, make it easy for you to get across the border.
Announcers like Brother Bill would plug various products popular with country people, such as light crust flour, chewing tobacco, pecan candies.
Electric bow ties, can you imagine that? Gravestone bargains, penny burial insurance, a penny a day for burial insurance. And there was a patent medicine called Peruna. I remember Peruna a little bit.
P-E-R-U-N-A. That was, I think, some kind of cold remedy. Oh, they had something called color back that made your hair gradually turn brown, you know, if it had been gray.
And, of course, Brinkley had something for the folks.
He had a doctor book, and then he had one, rather, I think we probably would call it salacious today, called The Story of Pa and Ma. And I have never had the privilege of reading this classic, but I can kind of guess that it was about Pa was losing his virility, and then he regained it, and Ma was very happy about this.
And this first book contains a lot of valuable information that I don't believe you can find in any other book in existence. My opinion is that you people who have failed to get this first book have missed something of importance, especially you men and you women who are sexually dead, sexually weak, men and women who have lost their sex glands by accident, injury, or surgery, men and women who have long despaired of ever having any sex life again.
My mother would say, "Oh, turn it off. That is ridiculous." But Daddy and I would listen to anything.
Now, if you have any trouble that had its origin in a sluggish system, I want you to try Crazy Water Crystals with the definite positive understanding that they must help you or your money will be refunded. You know, we get a lot of unsolicited letters from people...
Brinkley's weekly mail count exceeded 25,000 letters, and Del Rio developed plans for a new post office. In 1940, President Roosevelt's fireside chats focused on fascism, while Brinkley lectured on kidney and rectal ailments. Folks all over the nation heard Brinkley's broadcast, whether they wanted to or not. XERA's signal interfered with certain American and Canadian stations. According to Gerald Carsons, listeners tuned in Brinkley instead of their favorite program.
At 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, when all America either ate early or ate later, it was out there their radio to hear Amos and Andy on WGN in Chicago. Brinkley was right up there snuggling up between WJR in Detroit and WGN, and sometimes interfering and buzzing because he wandered, and he had all of this power, and that's one reason that he was considered to be a kind of outlaw. They called XCR at XCRA bootleg stations.
When it's round up time in Texas and the boom is on the stage.
The Mexican government more or less condoned Brinkley's escapades, presumably because years before, the United States and Canada had divided up the AM broadcast band, allocating 32 clear channel frequencies to themselves, leaving only 5 to Mexico and Cuba. To Mexico, Brinkley was a bargaining chip. Between 1933 and 1939, negotiations at 3 major international communication conferences were held. An agreement reached at the Havana Conference in 1939 required massive frequency reallocations and power reductions. It took 2 years of American arm wrestling before Mexico complied. In 1941, the Federales descended upon Villa Acuña a second time. Soon after, XERA was silenced. Former patients sued, and Brinkley declared bankruptcy. The following year, J.R. Brinkley died.
XERF in Ciudad Acuña, Coahuila, Mexico, is covering the entire nation. We're located at 1570 on your radio dial. This is Paul Gallagher, your neighbor along the way from Del Rio.
XEXO, XEDM, XEFW, XELO, XEMO, XEO.
Despite Brinkley's death and new regulations, the border still buzzed with electricity. Stations now dotted the 2,000-mile boundary that stretched between Texas and California. And back in Villa Acuña, XERF surfaced as the new king of the border blasters. Fresh out of World War II, Paul Callinger, DJ at KDLK in Lake Charles, Louisiana, sent an audition disc to XERF. 3 days later, Callinger signed on, hosting interviews, pitching commercials, and spinning discs.
There stands the glass that will ease all my pain.
Well, we started working there in 1948 and start playing country and western music. Wasn't long after, in 1949, 1950, I started getting calls from different artists around the country, such as Webb Pierce, Hank Williams, Hank Snow, Jim Reeves, Johnny Horton, and they wanted to be a guest on my program. Now, this is how a lot of the country and western music became popular. You might say that we pioneered the business, you know.
Brother, I'm on my way.
Exposure on Callinger's show was essential for a rising star, and many young hopefuls solicited his help.
Back in 1952, Mr. Webb Pierce came to Del Rio, and he says, "Paul, I just got off a four-star, and I signed with Decca, and I got a record here that's got lots of potential, but it needs the exposure. Would you help me?" And I said, "Well, let me listen to it." So I auditioned the record, and I listened to it, and it sounded pretty good. And I said, "We'll give it a whirl a few times." So I did. Wasn't long after that, and it hit in the top 10. It was called Wandering.
Wandering, wandering, here's kissing you. Wandering, wandering, if you're wandering too.
Not everyone performed on Callinger's show. Elvis Presley called one night, but Callinger refused. His show was strictly country. As the years passed, Callinger's popularity grew. And then in 1954...
Billboard magazine called me and said that you're number three in the nation. And I says, "Are you kidding? You got to be kidding." They said, "No, you're number three in the nation." Later on, the next year, I hit number four, then number five. And I never did get over five, though I was in the top five for eight consecutive years.
From coast to coast, border to border, wherever you are, wherever you may be, when you think of real fine entertainment, think of XERF, the station to which you are now listening to, located in Ciudad Acuña, Coahuila, Mexico. Our mailing address is Del Rio, Texas. This is Paul Callinger, your good neighbor along the way.
XERF offered fame and fortune to others besides Callinger. Brooklyn-born Bob Smith, DJ in Shreveport, Louisiana, listened to XERF, plotting his transformation.
"Next time you see me, things won't be the same. Yeah."
I wanted to create this character, Wolfman Jack, which was a little bit of all the different characters I had listened to as a kid growing up. Alan Freed, who came on the air as Moondog, and the Hound from Buffalo, New York.
And Smith knew that XERF was the biggest stage in the world, so he packed his bags and called the station's manager.
And I had a meeting with him the next day. I got there the night before and paid some Mexican taxi cab driver to take me across the border over to the station. It's real scary because there's no roads going out to the radio station. I had to go over sand dunes and everything, you know, to get out there. I thought the guy was taking me for a ride. You know, I didn't know whether I was ever going to get back or not.
He arrived in the midst of a labor management dispute. The workers grumbled that the manager hadn't spread the wealth, and they were ripe for new leadership. Smith, realizing the situation, flashed some cash, rallied the workers, and assumed control of XERF. Smith knew that bribery was a way of life on the border, and XERF's profits were lucrative. The old boss vowed revenge, and a scene ensued straight out of the Old West.
So we put barricades all around the station, and we set up a 30-millimeter machine gun and everything to protect the radio station, because it was like 10 miles outside the town of Villacuña. And even during the daytime and nighttime, I mean, there was just desolation. It looked like this radio station was sitting in the middle of the Mojave Desert or something, you know?
Everything went fine, and Bob Smith became Wolfman Jack, and the workers, pleased with their new boss, laxed up on their security.
Then all of a sudden, one morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, here they come over the hill, just as the sun was starting to rise, and they hit the radio station with about 60 guys on horsebacks and jeeps and everything. And I was in Del Rio, staying at the Del Rio Hotel with Wolf Woman. I hadn't seen her in a long time, and we were in there making love, and I was listening to the radio at the same time, and I heard the little Mexican guys, I think Reverend J. Charles Jessup was on the air, you know, and he broke in on the Reverend's message. He's yelling, "Pistoleros!" And you hear the bully going, "Ping, bang," turning around the station. So I jumped in my Starfire Oldsmobile convertible and boogied across the border, spreading $100 bills all over the place. I got the sheriff and guys in garbage trucks riding the scooters. And just as we arrived coming over the hill, the sun was just coming up. And you could see these guys. They were circling the station like Indians would circle a wagon train fortress or something, you know, and you can see the dust around the station from the horses riding around the station. And here we come over the hill in the horizon, shooting our guns and whooping and howling, and they saw us coming, and we chased them off.
After the smoke cleared, they discovered two banditos killed and a few of their men wounded. Several versions of this story exist. Paul Callinger claims to have been the victim of a lone gunman, while the Wolfman story varies with each telling. The truth remains a mystery. Over the next 2.5 years, the Wolfman operated XERF in the Brinkley tradition, splitting the airtime between country music, Pentecostal preachers, and his own show. Rockabilly singer Sleepy LaBeef was a devoted listener.
I like Wolfman Jack. He did the old-time blues, Muddy Waters stuff, Lightnin' Hopkins.
B.B. King to Amos Milburn to Willie Dixon and all those kind of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they named me Richard Kimmel.
And you could buy them in the black record stores, but the white folks couldn't buy them in the white record stores, so they ordered them from me. And we sold, 500-600 packages of those every day.
He never said, I'm black or anything else, but he'd come on, he talked the soul language, just like the Black Brothers. And he became famous.
Marvin Gaye! My man Marvin Gaye!
Record companies solicited the Wolfman with payoffs to play their records, but he refused. The money made through merchandise sold on the station kept the employees happy. Advertisers didn't pay for airtime, but sold items on a per-inquiry basis. For every order received, the advertiser would split a percentage of the money with the station. So it was in the station's best interest to pull in as much mail as possible. As Del Rio enlarged their post office, announcers enticed listeners like Sleepy LaBeef to ride in.
They would have an offer, maybe, and they'd have a deadline on this offer. They'd say, now, neighbors, friends and neighbors, you've got to get your letter stamped by midnight tonight. Get it in the mail right now, because this offer is a limited offer and will probably not be on again. And the offer might go on another month.
Yes, friend, we're going to send you 100 baby chicks right now for just $3.95 cash check or money order. Now, just imagine all the fun you're going to have with these little babies. You just lead them around on little leashes. You give them little names. Also sold a product called Florex, which I got from a pharmaceutical company in Mexico City, which was supposed to make an old man young, you know, when it came to your virility. And the folks really believed in that. They were really just little sugar pills, you know, and the FTC made me take it off the air, the Federal Trade Commission.
Potency cures have always been a big seller on the border, but no one admits to selling the most legendary item.
They had heard that I was the one that did this, that I sold an autographed picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, but that I've never done. However, we sold the Lord's Last Supper tablecloth. It had a picture of the Lord's Last Supper. It was in vinyl. It was a big seller those years, you know.
J for Jesus, mighty God is he.
Friends, incline your ears closer to your radio as I tell you that Salvation was the biggest seller on the border. The Reverend J.C. Bishop, one of the first radio evangelists, recorded his programs and sent them to several border stations. Realizing the potential of a broadcast ministry, Bishop signed a 40-year contract with XERF for $100,000. The formula for his success was simple.
I'd say, hello, everyone. This is Brother J.C. Bishop speaking to you direct from our radio studios here in the city of Dallas, Texas. And then I'd go from there. So we have a little group of praying people here, and usually I'd read a testimony or two on each broadcast. Here's what the Lord's doing for others. Send your request in, and if you can, as you write, send along a little love offering of some kind to help us pay for these broadcasts. They would send offering mostly $1, $2, $5, and $10. Once in a while, somebody would send a larger gift. I suppose the largest I ever had was about $1,500 in one letter.
Every night, fiery evangelists would cut through the darkness with pleas for donations, and the listener response was fluid. Many received 400 to 500 letters in one day. However, not all of these donations were used for God's ministry. The Reverend J. Charles Jessup purchased property, boats, cars, and planes. In 1964, Jessup was convicted of mail fraud, tax evasion, and polygamy. There were legitimate preachers, but saint or charlatan, they were on the X stations for the same reason.
At that time, there were such restrictions in this country on religious broadcasts. Many stations would not let you ask for an offering even. Down there, you were free. You could voice your needs and ask them to send gifts and so on. And, of course, the greater thing was they allowed this tremendous power.
We heard from Japan, Germany, England, South America, Australia, and those people said that they received the signal very good.
I remember when I was on the air, Nikita Khrushchev was in power, and I used to say a lot of dirty things about Nikita Khrushchev, and they wound up jamming us over there in Russia. They put a transmitter on the air just to jam XERF because certain Russian people were picking it up.
Going 100 miles an hour down the blue asphalt line, listening to the Wolfman of Del Rio.
You'd scarcely recognize the station in Villa Acuña these days. About the only thing left are the preachers. In 1964, Wolfman Jack hung up his holster and moved to XCRB in Baja California. From there, on to Los Angeles, where he sampled television and movie stardom and now syndicates his own radio program across America. In downtown Del Rio, Paul Callinger sits in his furniture store, surrounded by plaques and pictures from his XERF years. In 1979, he was inducted into the Country Music Disc Jockeys Hall of Fame, a treasured achievement. XERF and the other Border Blasters joined retirement too. Competition with television's sophisticated technology proved too much. Satellite and cable networks seduced the station's advertisers and audiences away from the border. But late some night, should your television be on, listen. Talk show hosts present rising musicians, network ministers pray for your soul, and advertisers want you to call right now because operators are standing by. And think, back to the stations where it all began. For National Public Radio, this is Rachel Moray.
Well, friends and neighbors, our time's all slipped away from us for this period of broadcast, but the time will roll right on around and we'll be back again almost before you know it. So won't you be waiting for us when we return? And until then, this is Cowboy Slim Reinhart speaking from the studios of XCG, and I'm also speaking for America's number one singing cowgirl, Patsy Montana. We're saying so long, everybody. Good luck to you, and above all, friends, we do wish you good health.
Wait for me, Slim.
Okay, Patsy.
I'm back in the saddle.
Heard long on cattle, and I'm happy in the saddle again. My spurs turned all rusty, still they're always trusty, and I'm happy in the saddle again.
This is All Things Considered.